Hello, happy March and happy daylight savings time. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show, coming to you with this week's episode, which will feature a discussion on the resignation of Dr. Dobson from the chairmanship of Focus on the Family, followed by an interview with Keith Moore, who is the founder of Indie Heaven, a repository of independent artists. So we're going to have a conversation with him. And then we're going to wrap up with an inbox question on engagement rings. Candace is going to join me here at the table for that. So you're going to want to stay tuned. We also want to make sure that you know that next week we'll be talking about the NCAA tournament. And we're going to hopefully educate me, or maybe I'll just have to educate myself, I guess, on that before then so that we can talk about that. In the meantime, go to our Boundless page on Facebook and check out the pool that is going on there, the 2009 NCAA Challenge, that I'm sure Mott and Steve and Ted and other people who are all things basketball have set up, and it'll be fun. So get in your picks there and start the, as I like to say, bracketization of all your teams. I don't even think that's a word, but I'm going to... I am coining it.
You know what I'm talking about, Steve. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so that's all next week, so you'll have that to look forward to. But here we are in the studio, in Studio A, and I am sitting in, as I usually do, the chair of Dr. Dobson, where he has done his radio broadcast. Well, not this exact location, but he has had his radio broadcast for now over 32 years. And Studio A is the home of the flagship Focus on the Family radio program. And for those of you who don't know, and I'm assuming that you only don't know if you've been living like in a gur in Outer Mongolia somewhere, the rest of you should know that Dr. Dobson has resigned as chairman of the board of Focus on the Family. And I know that the buzz in the news, being in PR myself and having had to track a lot of this, I think when the news first came out, people said, you know, whoa, what's this about? You know, he's been here for 32 years and are just wondering what the future of Focus is, and especially the future of our generation and those younger as they look towards Focus. And I don't know, what do you guys think?
I thought it was an amazing transition to be at the chapel where they actually made the announcement, and he came up and sort of, you know, gave a speech, and you could really almost see the mantle of authority moving. And just that he would care enough about the ministry to want to make sure that the transition goes well, and that the ministry doesn't just wait until he's gone and then flounder, but that he would actually be vested enough in the health of what Focus does, the work of Focus, to want to see it continue beyond him. That's rare.
Well, and you know, there's so many articles right now, especially as Jerry Falwell died and D. James Kennedy and other major leaders of the conservative movement, and that a lot of them lump Dr. Dobson in this list of the people who represent kind of maybe the glory days of a religious conservative movement, and trying to anticipate what does that mean and where are things going. And so I think some people look at this retirement and speculate, you know, is this the same as Dr. Dobson dying and passing along? What does that mean for his influence? And I think so. One of the things to keep in mind is that Dr. Dobson made it clear he's stepping away from a lot of leadership responsibilities to give new leadership an opportunity to step in, but is planning to continue to be heavily involved in the daily broadcast and still speaking out on issues of the day that he feels, you know, convictions about. And so to that end, it doesn't represent that his voice is gone, but I think he is indicating that he wants to make room for some new voices of young evangelicals to step up and hopefully follow some of the footsteps he left.
Yeah, he's been very careful to say that he's not retiring. He wants to make sure that that is clear, because he is still, as Steve just said, very involved in the broadcast. He's still writing. His book, Bringing Up Girls, is due out sometime this summer, I believe. And so he's got a lot going on. You'll still see him in the media and around and about. And Mott, were you there in chapel?
Yeah, I was. It was great to be there. And Dr. Moeller gave a sermon from Ecclesiastes about there's a time for everything, and he hushed the crowd when he said, "This is a time you're witnessing history here with this transition," and you could sense it in the room, like Candace was saying, that you were witnessing history. My favorite moment was when Dr. Moeller talked about how all of us there were riding the tsunami that first began with Dr. Dobson and his wife Shirley, and you hear again, it was just such a moment to honor Dr. Dobson and what he's done, and all of us there, I think, felt it. And I certainly do. And so, yeah, it was great. It was great to be there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ashley, representing kind of the newest representation of people who would identify with Focus, what were your impressions?
In chapel, it was surreal for me to be a part of that. And I think what was more surreal than just witnessing the transition was witnessing the grace with which it was done. Dr. Dobson was obviously emotional. He was gracious. He talked about how he wanted to model leadership well. That was why he was stepping down. And for someone in a younger generation watching the older generation release power that way, I was encouraged and I was proud to be affiliated with Focus on the Family. Since then, I've been in grocery stores or dress shops, and I've talked to clerks who've said, oh, you work for Focus on the Family. Dr. Dobson retired. What's going on with that? Is it his health? Was there conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And it fills me with pride to be able to say, no, it's none of that. Dr. Dobson has the same energy today that he had 20 years ago, he said in chapel. And it's not a conflict with the board. It's a transition of power that he knows needs to happen sooner rather than later. And as the younger generation witnessing that, I'm encouraged and motivated to move in leadership because of his transition.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I was sitting there in chapel as well, and I had known about the announcement a few days prior because we had to come together with a plan for releasing this to the media as well. So I kind of sat there, and I knew that our now chairman of the board, Pat Caruana, was going to stand up and read a statement. And so as he did so, I kind of watched people's faces, you know, just to see how they would react. And it was very, you know, you could tell that people received it very graciously, and there wasn't a lot of drama, and it wasn't all weird, you know, like, oh my goodness, or people freaking out and stuff. But it was funny, I actually missed the entire Dr. Dobson portion, because right after Dr. Moeller started speaking, I got pulled out of chapel because within a half hour, we were the number one story on Drudge. And it was very funny because, you know, all of a sudden we're starting to get these calls and my phone starts ringing, and I was pretty much at my desk until 8 p.m. that night fielding media calls and setting up interviews. Because what we think of as a natural transition, you know, and just, wow, you know, this is such a great thing. And we know how tied Dr. Dobson is to Focus and how much he intends to remain so. But everyone else was trying to make some other story, you know, about it.
And doesn't it just remind you that how the world does leadership is different than how Christians do or should do leadership, that the Bible models for us, you know, in the transition between Elijah and Elisha and that physical mantle moving from one generation to the next. I remember being in my 20s and feeling like, gosh, these old people are sticking around too long. I want to be at the table. I want to be in leadership, and almost feeling this urgency to sort of push them out of the way and, you know, wrest power from them and thinking it's our turn to lead. And now that I'm a little bit older, I feel sober about it, and I feel the weight of responsibility, and I see Dr. Dobson, how he has carried that responsibility for so many decades, and am so thankful that he's not retiring, because he's sticking around enough to still model leadership for those of us who have so much to learn. I think it's easy to be an upstart when you're 20, that when you get to be almost 40, you start to go, that's a lot of responsibility.
Well, and I think that level of responsibility, as the media scrambles to figure out, so who's the head of the religious right and all this kind of stuff, that's kind of the secondary story that's out there. And I think many of the people that get floated as, oh, this is the presumed leader. And for one thing, I mean, it's not like Dr. Dobson ever took that mantle on and said, I'm going to be the leader. I mean, that was something where he was set up by all the magazines because they wanted a target. Mm-hmm. You know, in the same way they're setting up Rush Limbaugh now and other people. They'll always find somebody, because the hope is, let's find somebody and let's beat up on them so that we can demoralize, you know, the movement of people out there who share these values. But anybody who the media tries to now put that mantle on and says, okay, this is the person, is going to realize that weight of, one thing, having your own personal convictions, but also trying to go out there and discern the times and make decisions like that. And it's so easy to beat up on anybody who sticks their neck out, who tries to take a stand. And so it has been easy for people to beat up on Dr. Dobson. He probably takes as much friendly fire from other believers as he does from people who aren't believers. And I think it's because it's just easy to pick on the guy at the top. And so I think this next generation is going to find out it's hard to get out there, to get into the arena. And Dr. Dobson will be the first to tell you, he didn't rush out into the arena. It was actually Jimmy Carter, a Democratic president, who asked him to come serve in a public way. And then he got pulled onto commissions for gambling and pornography and other things like that, and reluctantly moved out and tried to represent a voice of families and values. And I just think we need to be in prayer about what that next generation will do and how they're going to handle the heavy weight of leadership.
Steve, you mentioned the demoralization of Dr. Dobson as the head of the religious right. And as someone in the Boundless Target audience, I definitely have been influenced by that. Before I came to Focus on the Family Institute, my view of Dr. Dobson was negative. Mm. And I came here really hesitant because of Dr. Dobson's leadership. And in my time at the Institute, I sat in on countless broadcasts, personal Q&As with our class and Dr. Dobson, and it was through those interactions that my view of him completely changed.
Yeah.
I have overwhelming respect for this man, for this ministry. I see every issue that he takes a hard line on, he will weep over. He has incredible compassion for. And I wonder if there's some of our audience who might have that same negative view of Dr. Dobson because he is the leader of the religious right.
Yeah, and I think that's where people fail to see Dr. Dobson's heart, that he really is. I mean, when you think about the scriptural principles of speaking the truth in love, I mean, he really does have a big heart and really brings an empathy and a strong level of love. But he's come to recognize that it's not more loving to throw the truth under the bus and to never take a hard stand and be absolute. And I think there are a lot of people in the Christian community who just love to take pot shots at him because they know they don't want to say the hard words. They'd rather come across as more loving, more compassionate by never saying anything difficult. And Dr. Dobson will be the first to tell you that he's imperfect and that he's messed up at times and you know that it is hard to get out there and know when it's the best way to get out, I mean, to be principled. But anybody who spends any face-to-face time with him, and even a lot of, you know, people like Larry King and CEOs and other people that he's been in settings with where he's spoken, I mean, you'll see grown men weeping because he's so good at engaging with people's hearts. And that really is the heart of who he is, even though he might get caricatured in all kinds of different ways as being some, you know, out-of-touch political puppet of the Republican Party or anything else that we hear is of those caricatures.
Mm-hmm. You almost have to build a relationship with him via the daily broadcast or some of the other things that he's done for 30 years in order to really understand who he is. Because if your perception of Dr. Dobson is just via Katie Couric or Keith Olbermann or, you know, 365 Gay, you're probably not going to be getting the picture of Dr. Dobson that, you know, is really a full one. Now, I think there's something to be said for, you know, when I grew up, my parents were older. And so I understand Dr. Dobson when he takes a hard line on things and the way that he presents things. And he's standing for, like I mentioned earlier in the program, the principles upon which this ministry was founded. And I think we're still going to continue to do that under Jim Daly. We have to, because they're biblical. And that involves things that we've talked about on this show, abortion, same-sex marriage, other things, policy-related as well as methodologies and principles for raising your kids and for having strong marriages and things that are considered extremely soft issues that anyone could benefit from and that anyone should be looking towards as a good model. But how do you all think that that is going to play out practically now as we move forward, not only with our marriage and parenting themes and with our core focus audience, but with Boundless and other venues as well?
Well, I know we are committed with Boundless, especially to continue to be a source of encouragement for young adults to realize that there aren't a lot of people out there offering good blueprints to get married well, to start a family well, considering those are desires that young adults, especially coming out of high school, 3/4 of young adults will say that is a desire of my heart. But there aren't that many great services out there to help them do it well, and we're still committed to doing that. And it's a reminder that for those policy issues that Dr. Dobson and Focus often get tagged with, that's the smallest percentage of what we do here, that the biggest percentage of what we do here is actually try to build strong relationships and build strong families, recognizing that what we do to help families is one of the best policy efforts we could ever do. That, I mean, we've had Tom Enery on here talking about how that's one of the best forms of social justice. To fight poverty, you help families. To grow wealth, you help families. And that's really what's going to continue to be our heartbeat.
Not that there's anything wrong with talking about policy. I mean, I think one of the fundamental disagreements that Christians have with each other is our role in the public square. Mm-hmm. I mean, can we impose Christian morality within the public square? And I think that's where a lot of the discomfort that people have with Dr. Dobson is not with Dr. Dobson, because I became familiar with Dr. Dobson late in life. After I became a Christian, I was on the Hill, and I saw him on Larry King or some talk show. It was just like 10 years ago. And my first impression of him in that role, talking about public policy, was, I love this man. Because you know what? He you could see his heart. I don't think I've ever seen Dr. Dobson talk about legislation or morality in the public square where you couldn't see his heart. And that's what I love about Dr.
Well,
Dobson.
In that sense, he's more in the mold of the founding fathers than most of the politicians on Capitol Hill, because he understands that without a biblical morality, our system of government crumbles.
I think, you know, this retirement does show a certain change in the guard, and that our hope is that we will continue to hold on to the principles that should never change, that we should always be concerned about life at every stage, that, you know, from conception to death, we're going to continue in a culture that frankly loves death to have to be out there as an advocate for life, for life in all categories, and that we're going to have to continue to be advocates for the family, that this is a culture that's increasingly considering the needs of families less and less, and that there are many who would say, well, just give rights to everybody and just throw them into any kind of social arrangements that are out there. And research tells us that that's not good for kids, that kids always end up worse off if you just tolerate any and all different kinds of arrangements, that a strong family is the best recipe for a strong future. And so we're going to continue to hold up those issues, but we know we're going to have new challenges, that technology is going to continue to develop, that's going to bring new questions to us, that maybe some of the fights of a decade ago are going to turn into different kinds of challenges, new things we have to look at regarding caring for creation from a strong biblical perspective, or dealing with economic challenges that a generation before us didn't have to deal with. And so it's going to continue to be up to the new generation of focus and the new generation of our listeners to figure out, how do you bring timeless truths to change that's happening at a rapid pace around us, and continuing to realize the family's got a big place in all that.
And I think if you see the, you know, we tend to forget this, but if you see the letters that come into focus every day and the emails and the phone calls, they attest to the fact that people still want help with the issues that are affecting their families. And there's still many of the issues that affected families, you know, 30 years ago, 32 years ago when this ministry was founded. And Dr. Dobson was very adamant about addressing people as people, and as though he were speaking to them one-on-one, and knowing that that mom sitting at home and not knowing what to do, you know, with her disobedient child, or the husband whose wife walked out on him, or whatever. These people want to come to focus, and they need that help. And I think I'm reminded, I mentioned this on the line this week as well, but we had Frank Luntz, author of Words That Work, in here a few weeks ago, and he said something. He said, you know, one of the most critical times for reaching people, he used the example of a woman who is pregnant for the first time, a young mom. That is when she is reevaluating everything in her life. She's reevaluating her views on faith, on education, on family, everything, politics, everything that would affect her. Now she has this life that she's responsible for. And I think a lot of us, you know, listeners to The Boundless Show, feel that in our demographic, well, that doesn't affect us. And we'll say, you know, Focus on the Family is our parents' ministry. Well, I would say that if that is your view, that is lame, and you need to change it. So you need to find out what we're doing here at Focus on the Family as a whole, not just with Boundless. I mean, obviously, that's an entry point. But here at Focus, because we are really in the middle of what Dr. Dobson has said, and it's become cliche, the culture war, and it's still raging, and we're still trying to meet the needs of families worldwide and to do so in a compassionate way that ultimately showcases the love of Christ and introduces people to the gospel of Christ, which is really the hope that any of us have beyond anything. So all that to say, we're excited that Dr. Dobson is still going to be involved in the work here at Focus on the Family, and we're so grateful to him and for the legacy that he is now leaving us and passing on to us. And he's still around. As I said earlier, he's not retiring. I have to say that as a PR person. So, but all that to say, we're looking forward to seeing more of his work here in the future.
What if the fire burns out? What if we're left without anyone to call our own? You've got it figured out, but if ever you're
for this week's culture segment, we are visited long distance, I guess, by phone with Keith Moore. Keith Moore is the founder and president of Indie Heaven, and that is IndieHeaven.com. Keith, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate your interest in Indie Heaven and the mission that God has me on.
Well, this is really fun because as we were chatting before, we've actually featured since the beginning of the Boundless Show, which we're just over a year now. We just celebrated our first anniversary. We've used quite a few independent artists and I've actually been surprised at how much feedback we've received from listeners who have said, you know, we're so excited to be hearing these new artists on your show. And that was surprising to me because a lot of these folks are saying, yeah, you know, some of these artists, mainstream ones, whatever, and not to diss them because we interview them and use them too. But, you know, they know where they are and they know where they can access their music and they know about them. But to learn about some of these up and coming artists and ones who may be on, maybe, you know, producing independently and on independent labels and whatnot, is kind of exciting for our listeners. So,
yep. That it's a great time, you know, for not only for the artists, but also for just fans of Christian music to realize that there is quite a bit more music out there than what they're hearing, you know, on the radio stations out there, you know, land-based radio stations. It's a whole movement, a whole new thing that I believe God is doing right now to just burst forth new creativity with artists who are simply just doing the music because they love to do it. So it's a wonderful time.
Exactly. So start out by explaining to us a little bit what Indie Heaven actually is, because a lot of, you know, our listeners are going to be pretty savvy. They're online a lot and they like to check this kind of stuff out. So give us a little rundown.
Sure. Sure. Well, I mean, I'm sure most people are familiar with all the, you know, various websites out there where they can find new music. Indie Heaven is a kind of like a, one of those God-called missions that I've been doing since 1997. And basically what I'm doing is bringing together independent Christian musicians, you know, and giving them a great place to post their content out so they, you know, can put their music out there. They can, you know, have a complete profile out there. One of the things that, that makes Indie Heaven really nice is the fact that we, you know, we're a real clean site, so it, you're not going to find things on Indie Heaven that maybe you shouldn't be seeing as far as advertising and things, you know, posting up on artist profiles. So we're member supported, which means that the members actually of Indie Heaven help us to run the site. So we're really like a cooperative, or what I call like an alliance of artists who are, we're all working together. So even though the name is Indie Heaven, Indie is slang for independent. I really consider us to be more interdependent heaven, where we're simply coming together as artists and we're helping one another by, creating an organization that's credible, where people can actually come and listen. And the majority of the artists who are with us on Indie Heaven are serious about what they're doing, because they're out there actually in the fields ministering and doing their music and ministry in their own regions, or maybe some of them are national artists, and some of them were one time CCM signed artists like John Schlitt from Petra and Margaret Becker and Brian Duncan. And these are all names that people are familiar with. You know, Randy Stonehill just joined us. So these are artists who were once part of that industry, who are still, you know, doing their music and their ministry, but they're no longer signed to a recording contract. They're actually independent. So we're excited about that, you know, and be able to provide a home for these artists and an organization that's serious about, you know, what they're doing to try to create a new path for Christian artists. So you can come to Indie Heaven. You can listen to music. You can buy music if you want. People can buy singles, or they can buy the digital album, or they can buy a CD if they still want to buy a CD. And the cool thing about that is that our members get all 100% of the sale of their music, which goes directly to support their music mission. So we don't take a piece of their music sales.
Mm-hmm. And then 80% of the money doesn't have to go to T-shirts and hair products for the, you know, for the ancillary road crews and whatnot. So that's good.
Right. You know, of course, I mean, these artists are mostly local regional artists, although, you know, like I say, some of them are national artists who have decided to become a part of Indie Heaven. And like I say, what separates us really from, like, say, like MySpace, where it's kind of like a free-for-all, you know, you get tons of artists on there and you have no idea where they're at. With Indie Heaven, the artists are supporting the organization, so they're a little bit, I mean, they're more serious about what they're doing because they're supporting us and being able to help us keep that site online.
Yeah, so what walk us through a little bit. I think some of us probably don't have an understanding of the typical independent artist. So, like, let's say that we have a guy who, you know, is out of college and he picked up a guitar, he learned how to play some chords, he started writing songs. All of a sudden he's playing around, you know, in his town, and people are like, "Hey, I like your stuff." What is the trajectory then? I mean, you know, some people play venues and then they end up on labels, and some people go independent. Talk to us a little bit about what that looks like, the path of an independent artist.
Sure. Well, you pretty much spelled it out. I mean, you know, these artists are starting off on their own, writing songs and going out and doing local events. I mean, that's kind of what I teach independent artists to do anyway, start where they're, you know, right, bloom where they're planted, kind of, you know, become an artist in their own region that has some demand, then, you know, sprout out from there. But these artists are self-producing their music, or, you know, they're their own label. Basically, these independents are their own label. So, you know, we have about 700 members on Indie Heaven, and every one of them is their own label. So they're creating their own music on their own. They're funding it, or they, you know, they have a friend that might be funding it, but they're pretty much doing everything on their own. And some of these artists now are going, you know, I really don't need to sign to a record label in order to reach people. So we're in an exciting time where the artist actually can go right to the end consumer and, you know, distribute their music right to them, or, you know, they don't need the industry machine. And honestly, a lot of it's changing anyway. As we all know, the industry is kind of going through a tough time because just of the economy and how people are buying music, if they buy it at all. So it's really changing. But that's what we're doing, is we're trying to create this new path for these artists to be able to to use our organization to reach people in a very credible, professional manner. So it's a wonderful time just for this, like I say, bursting of creativity that these artists are coming out with, that that they can pretty much produce music that they believe God wants them to produce without having to go through that middleman filter, you know, who might be looking at it more from a commercial standpoint rather than simply just for the music standpoint. So, you know, it's kind of like the Reformation of Martin Luther back in the old days, you know, where he kind of had enough of people having to go through the middleman to be able to reach God. Well, it's kind of the same thing with music, in that the industry is kind of was that filter, and now the artists don't need to really necessarily use that filter middleman to reach the end consumer.
Yeah. What would you say are some of the popular or the trends that are happening now in independent music? Are there certain genres that are kind of coming to the surface? I mean, I think we maybe have a stereotype of independent music that it's kind of, you know, scruffy looking kids sitting around dark, you know, living rooms playing their guitars. But what are we looking at as far as the new trends and new artists?
Yeah, it's not like that at all. I mean, Indie Heaven has a majority of worship artists on there, and I would say contemporary artists. I mean, the hip-hop movement is huge in the independent circles, although we don't have a ton of that on our site. I mean, they're welcome to join our site, but we just don't have a ton of hip-hop. But it's no longer like the Seattle grunge thing. I mean, it's not like that at all. I know back, you know, 5-10 years ago, indie meant kind of like that grungy underground basement thing, but it's not like that any longer. I mean, when you have artists like Margaret Becker, who is now independent, that changes is the definition of the term. So it's really not like that at all. It's these artists are producing really good quality for the most part. I mean, they can produce great music on their own, or maybe they have producer friends. I mean, I live in Nashville, and most of the same people who are producing the big artists that people recognize are also producing indie music and doing a great job with it. So it's just a different way of the pathway for the artist. Mm-hmm. But the music is great.
Now, we know that a lot of artists who are on labels, especially some of the bigger ones, spend a lot of their time traveling around, not only doing concerts and tours, but doing radio promotion. And, you know, I know I've heard of the game, you know, that happens when it comes mm-hmm. to getting a single on the air and what it looks like and who you have to take out to dinner and all the all the craziness. Give us like the average month of an indie artist. What's their life going to look like from day to day?
Well, I mean, we have you know, artists on Indie Heaven who simply are just going out and performing, locally, maybe a couple times a month, who have real jobs and, you know, who are just doing this on the side. But then we have artists like Nathan Clark George, who I know has had some exposure on Focus on the Family, and you guys, I believe, have used some of his music. And he's a full-time independent artist who, you know, does 15, 20 dates a month, just as many as, like, say, Casting Crowns. And he's just going out on a different level. You know, he's going out by himself and keeping
his
expenses real low, but he's out there in the fields and doing a great job. So it really varies depending on what the artist can do. And that's the cool thing about being an independent artist is that you can actually do your ministry and your mission on your terms, where you're not obligated to the industry machine. I mean, the Christian music industry has a reputation of kind of working artists really hard, you know, until they can't work anymore, and then it's like they're done, and then, so they find another one, and that's okay. It's just the way it works. But with the independent, they can do things on their terms. They can build their ministry and their you know, career slowly if they want to, or they can really bust forth and really try to make it work. So we have artists all over the map, you know. We have artists who are out doing those radio station tours and who are hiring the same radio promoters that the big artists are hiring to go service their songs. And the cool thing is that Christian radio stations are slowly beginning to open up their playlist a little bit to independent artists and give them at least a shot if they're serious about what they're doing and if their music is really good. I mean, it's got to compete on that level of a Casting Crowns or a Michael W. I mean, and that's not easy, but it is being done.
Sure. Okay, yeah. So since you're kind of alluding to this, can you maybe throw out just a few kind of the top? I know that you guys have kind of some top lists on the site as far as audience can rate songs, they can rate artists. What are some names out there, some people that we should be looking at, maybe in a sampling of different genres?
Ooh, well, I mean, on the acoustic folk side, I mean, Nathan Clark George is definitely a wonderful artist. I mean, his artistry and his commitment to his craft is excellent. Nathan's won several of our Momentum Awards. We do a conference here in Nashville coming up the end of March, and it's a conference by independents for independents, and so we're not really basing, you know, our conference on trying to break into the CCM ministry. We're actually trying to train independents to remain independent and help one another and kind of create that interdependent relationship. But Nathan has won several awards. We kind of do like our version of the Indie Dove Awards there, you know, called Momentums, and we're really just recognizing artists who are pursuing excellence and passion in their music mission. So Nathan's won the acoustic division a couple times just because he's great. I mean, really, really phenomenal artist. On the worship side, we've got a bunch of really good worship artists. We got a guy from Texas named Gabriel who has done a great job with his music. Let me see who else. We've got Journey Home they're also from Texas, another worship group, writing phenomenal music, and they've had a couple cuts placed on Katina's record, so they're doing a good job. Daryl Evans is with us now, so you know we know Daryl from some of his huge songs in the past, but he's now independent and has a new record out that's phenomenal. On the rock side, we've got a band from Athens, Georgia called Scarlet Snow, which has done a great job on a new project that they're doing, and so you got to check them out. Trying to think on the well, most of your audience is young there, so they would probably be more hip to the rock stuff. But again, we have phenomenal worship artists on Indie Heaven who are doing, you know, rock style worship that's similar to what you'd hear maybe like a Casting Crowns do or a Building 429, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, you did make reference to the Christian Independent Alliance Summit, the CIA Summit, which is coming up, and our own Dave Sockheld, our engineer, is going to be attending that on our behalf, and he is wondering, you know, he's gonna have to hippify his look a little bit, I think. He's thinking of maybe growing a goatee. He doesn't know what he has to do to fit in and be accepted, and he's very concerned about his, you know.
Well,
maybe if you could take him under your wing, we would appreciate it.
About a lot of these people in our organizations specifically is that they seem to be pretty real people. I mean, they're not trying to project an image of hipness. They're just simply going out and doing what they believe the Lord's called them to do, and in a style that just is real. I mean, and that's what I love about the independent movement is that it's a movement based on just real people doing real mission that God has called them to, and they're not too worried about the commerce and the commercial arena. They simply just want to go do what they love to do, and that's what I've been teaching them. I've actually been teaching them for many years to create simply because they love to create as an act of worship to the Lord, not because of what they think they're going to get out of it. So when you take the commerce out of it, it allows, I think, the creativity that's maybe a little more expressive, a little more real to come forth, because you know the Christian music industry has this reputation of producing music that doesn't really challenge too much. It's kind of maybe a little sugary and, you know, kind of feel good, safe for the whole family. And the cool thing about the independents is they're just writing what's on their mind and what's on their heart, and some of that stuff, you know, is might be a little painful, but that's what the Christian walk is all about. It's not always good. The heart of the artist, really, again, the big message that I want to get across to them is simply do your mission because you love to do it, not because of what you think you're going to get out of it, and to serve people and use music if you must. I mean, that's really this new movement. And so we want to train them and equip them and give them, you know, the encouragement that they need to be able to go do this but get out of this commercial box, because that box is really small, and only so many of them are going to be able to fit in that box. So what do the rest of them do? I say go out and just do what God's called you to do and reach people, you know, and encourage them and love on them and, you know, and use music if you have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and those are good words and really applicable to those of us, you know, here at Boundless who, you know, may not have any musical talent, but we're called to do what we do well and to do it as a mission and as unto the Lord. And I think that's an important reminder for all of us, whether, you know, because we tend to... I know we often think of people who are in ministry as being on some other plane, you know, and that's not the case. Everyone is called to use our gifts as we've been called to do that, and to do it well. And like you said, the commercial is not is not at the forefront. I mean, of what we're doing. So, well, we're looking forward to sending Dave out there to meet you and to meet some new artists. And just a word to our listeners: we will hopefully be becoming acquainted with some of those folks and using their music here in the near future. Again, the site is Indie Heaven. That's INDIE heaven.com. Make sure that you go and check it out and listen to some of the new artists. Start voting for some favorites. Let the community there know what your interests are. I'm sure there's chance for interaction with folks. And if you are an independent artist or you are, that you're looking at doing something like that as a ministry, definitely Keith and his group are folks to connect with and get some info on. So, Keith, thank you so much for being part of this conversation today.
Thanks so much.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I'm in the studio with Candace. Welcome back, Candace.
Thanks, Lisa.
To answer a question from one of our listeners regarding rings, engagement rings. So
bring it on.
This may come to blows, so we'll see how we fare. All right, she says, my boyfriend and I have been dating for about 6 months now and are moving toward engagement. At his suggestion, we recently went to a couple places to look at rings. He said he just wanted to see what would catch my eye. It has become apparent that I have expensive taste when it comes to diamonds. He works very hard, putting in 35 hours a week and going to grad school full time. He definitely doesn't have any extra money lying around, and engagement, wedding, marriage is not something he has saved for. A few days ago, he told me what he wanted to spend on a ring and said he would love my input because he wants me to be happy with it. I can't imagine a diamond ring out there within his price range that I would really like. I told him that since we're tight on money right now, I would be more than happy to just wait on a ring and wear a band for a few years. I would also be fine with getting a simulated diamond ring at the time of our engagement, as they are exponentially less expensive than the real thing, and a larger stone would be within reach. I wish I didn't care a bit about what kind of ring I get, and I'm asking God to give me wisdom on this. Of course, marriage is what is to be celebrated here, but the issue of a ring remains. I know that beauty and the things of this earth are fleeting. I just hate for him to spend money on something I won't like. Do you think I'm being unreasonable? I would really appreciate your advice on this. I want to honor my boyfriend and, most of all, honor the Lord in this situation.
I think it's great that your boyfriend asked for your input. A lot of boyfriends or fiancés, soon to be fiancés, don't ask, and women end up with very expensive rings that they don't like, and they have to then ask, gosh, do I ask for the receipt? You know, these are not the kinds of baubles you can easily exchange. And so this is great that he wanted your input about what your style is. And I think it's important for you, though, to recognize that it is the man's responsibility, if he decides to buy a diamond, to pick it out, to pay for it, to present it to you. And this is an opportunity for you to pray for humility and to pray for a grateful heart, to be able to receive what he offers you in a godly way, in a truly grateful way, to be thrilled that your boyfriend loved you enough to go out and spend any of his money, given that he is a student working his fingers to the bone, 35 hours a week plus full-time grad school, is a huge load for him to be carrying. And for him to think that your relationship is important enough that it warrants a diamond, I think says a lot about his character. So what will it say about your character, how you respond to what he gives you?
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think it's okay if he asks for your input to say, you know, honey, I really love high quality and I know that that can be expensive. So I'd rather go small and have a good quality small diamond than have a rock that has, you know, an occlusion you can see a foot away.
A bug trapped in it.
Exactly. The other caution I... like Jurassic Park. The other caution I would throw out there is that if you say, let's get a band now and we'll get the diamond later, that often is an unrealistic thing. And I know because that was the idea that Steve and I had talked about at one point. And the reality is when you get to the point that you think you should be able to afford the bigger ring, suddenly you're pregnant with your first baby and you have to buy a crib and you've got to buy formula and you've got to buy diapers. And, you know, so really the upgrade to the bigger diamond in other generations happened at the 50th wedding anniversary. And so I think we need to recalibrate our expectations. Marriage is not about getting big diamonds and it's not about the cake or the dress. Marriage ultimately is about a relationship designed to show a fallen world what Christ desires to have with his church. And so this is so much bigger than you and your desires for jewelry. And yes, the engagement ring is important because it's the opportunity then you have to say to all your friends, look what my fiance got me. It's an opportunity to brag on him and to be proud of him and to have a visible symbol of your love. But the more important thing is the strength of the relationship. And I think how you respond to what he gives to you, if you're able to receive his gift, says a lot about the health of your relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, that, I mean, aren't engagement rings supposed to mark where you are at that point? I mean, you can look, you know, my mom was married 50 years and can look back now on her ring and it's just like this little flake of stone, you know, and but she remembers when,
yeah, it's her most precious.
Yeah. And she, well, she just found out, though, that the setting is platinum and she didn't know that. And the ring was super cheap. And so the jeweler was telling her, you know, this is so amazing that this is platinum. But anyway, it's just this little tiny, you know, you need a magnifying glass to see it.
Right.
But she remembers my dad giving it to her and she remembers the moment. And she remembers that they were just coming out of college and mm-hmm. were poor and just didn't have anything. And I think there's maybe this, you know, we're getting this false sense of what's real at this point because so many people are marrying older and so maybe they have more money.
Right.
So now you see a lot of girls coming with engagement rings who their fiancés are in their 30s and are established and have jobs and give them some, you know, $8,000-$10,000 ring, whatever. And it's just got a huge stone yeah. and it's got the platinum setting and stuff. And it's just like, whoa. And
yeah. Well, the expectations have gotten so whacked. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is just the diamond industry telling you that, you know, is 3 months salary too much to spend on the rest of your life? I mean, this
because is forever, Candace. A diamond is forever.
And it's one of the most overpriced forevers you can buy. It really
is. Go sit on a piece of coal for a million years and then right. just give it to her.
It's a marketing gimmick to say you have to have a certain size and you've got to have it when you get engaged. And I had a boss I worked for once who was engaged, but not getting married, living with her fiance. And I found out later that he had given her the choice. Do you want the carrot or the house? And in what order?
Whoa.
And she said house first, then carrot. And so, I mean, I think that speaks to what her priorities were. And we need to check and make sure our priorities are in line with scripture. And you're right. A diamond ring given at the time of engagement should be appropriate to what the man is earning at that time. He's going to be taking on the role of provider. And frankly, if you don't think he can buy you a big enough ring, I'm not sure you're ready to submit to him as your provider in other areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's dicey. And we're not saying, I don't think we're saying that she should not have any input as far. I mean, yeah, tell him what kind of, you know, what shape of stone you like or mm-hmm. so that it look. But yeah, if you're just talking about, you know, size and
well, and ask yourself, would you rather have a plain band that symbolizes your relationship and be married to him, or would you rather have nothing? And mm-hmm. and if you say, you know, the most important thing to me is a rock that I'm proud of, then I think that's a red flag that this should not move into marriage yet.
Yeah, that's good. So, well, wow, it's a touchy and emotional subject. It can be very mm-hmm. emotional, I think, for women because it's their once in a lifetime thing and it's a big deal. But so we understand, we feel your pain, listener.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
but remember, it's the marketers who want you to feel that way. It's not God. It's not scripture. It's not your fiance. He wants you to love what he picks out for you.
Right. Yeah. My sister lost her ring in her garden years and years ago and never got it back. So that ring, whatever you end up with is going to be plunged in dish suds and who knows where else within 3 years. So whatever. Well, thanks, Candace, for weighing in on that question. We love to hear your questions. Please write to us at editor@boundless.org and give us these kind of dilemmas, because not only are they good for us to think about to see how we would advise you, but sometimes they kind of hit us right where we are as well.
Right.
So, and for those of us who have not yet received rings, you know, conviction, whatever. So I hate that, but that's all to say. So that is it for this week's show. Make sure that you check out our show next week where we discuss the NCAA tournament. I'm sure Mott and Steve are extremely excited about that. So make sure that you tune in for that show. In the meantime, you can go to our page on Facebook and check out the 2009 Basketball Tournament Challenge, where you can use your skill or whatever else you may or may not possess to pick your teams and see how you do against other folks who may or may not be following this. And, you know, if you don't follow it, just pick teams as well, and you might just by luck get something. So we'll talk about Selection Sunday and all things NCAA next week. Until then, for The Boundless Show, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.